the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 319, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. The debate about BYU basketball being mediocre rages on Twitter and Cougar Board, and Matt and I jump in and determine if BYU basketball really is mediocre, or maybe something a little better. Then we dive into spring football, discussing Zach Katoa's emergency running back, the plethora of tight ends, and whether Zach Wilson might be the 2018 starting QB. Also on the show, Boston accents, March Madness, and what effect Heath Schroyer's departure will have on the basketball team. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, and listen to us right now. So Matt, have you ever seen that skit? I forget who it is. I think it's a Saturday Night Live skit. It is Seth Meyers, where it's the trailer for the movie Boston Accent.
Yes.
Do you remember this? Yes. Seth Meyers, right?
I think it is Seth Meyers.
I think it's Seth Meyers. And so Matt, you were on a plane today, and you heard a Boston accent.
I did. So the pilot was talking about the weather at our destination. And it was like every single word. I'm like, this guy is definitely from Boston. I mean, this guy isn't from Maine. This guy's not from New Hampshire. This guy is from Boston.
He's not from Weston, Mass.
No, I was thinking he might tell me he was from Saugus.
He was from Saugus. Or maybe Situate.
Situate. Actually, it wouldn't have been Worcester. Too far west. His accent would have placed him further east.
Gloucester.
There you go.
Could have been from Gloucester. All right.
Or Hanover.
Or from Hanover. That could have been from Hanover.
So, yeah, so there's this accent. It's crazy, right? And they're making all the announcements. I mean, this guy's totally from New England. I'm going to give him, like, a go Pats or something when I'm getting off this plane, you know, because they sit there and they're like, have a good night, you know. You know, the whole bye-bye thing. Bye-bye. So I'm coming up the aisle, and I see a guy, and as I'm walking towards him, I said, hey, are you the pilot? He says, no, I'm one of the pilots, but I wasn't the pilot. I don't know what that means. There's a couple of them in there. I don't know what they do.
Co-pilot.
I said, is the pilot from New England? He says, yeah, he's from New England, but so am I. I said, oh, I could tell from his accent, I grew up just outside of Boston. And the guy looks, kind of cocks his head, and he says, where'd you grow up? And I said, Norwell. And his eyes get, like, huge. And he says, I went to Norwell High School. I was 85 or 86 or something. I'm like, you guys, this is crazy. I'm on a flight from New Orleans to Houston. And we went to a high school that's got 500, had 500 kids in it.
Less than, like, that when I went there.
And so, and in the late 80s, probably even a little bit smaller, right? I bet it was 400 kids.
It was less than 450 when I went there. In the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, they were in the 70s per class. So you're talking about, you know, less than 400 kids in the four grades.
So he's like, well, what year did you graduate? And I told him, he's like, yeah, we didn't overlap. We weren't even close. but you know, anyway, so, but he grew up in a house just, I mean, probably a mile or two, maybe a mile away from the house we lived in when I graduated high school. It was crazy, crazy small world.
So Matt, are we doing the rest of this episode in our Boston accents?
My Boston accent sucks.
Really?
Your Boston accent is pretty good. Well, you do a good Boston accent.
Why
accent is bad. It's bad. I can't do it anymore.
Sam's is good.
We watch videos from when I was in high school, and
dude,
my
you
wife
had one.
Just my wife thinks it's hilarious. My kids laugh, and they're like, "Is that really you?" But I can't do it anymore.
Because how old were you when we moved there? Bad. You were what, 7?
7 years old.
7 years old when we moved there.
I don't really remember living anywhere else.
So when I was a freshman at BYU, I was the ward prayer co-coordinator. That was my calling.
Okay? It's a pretty serious calling.
Oh, it's a big deal. I mean,
it's a really big deal.
They don't put anybody in there.
Nope. They don't just put anybody in there.
The co-coordinator.
The co-coordinator. You need two co's at the front of that.
Okay. I mean, you've got two people running the show because it's a big deal.
That's almost as important as the first calling I had after my mission.
What was that? Greeter?
I was the assistant bread bringer.
Ah, yes. Very important. Very important.
So it's because my roommate, they found out he couldn't be trusted to remember it. So they asked me to help him remember so that way we could forget together.
That's good. That's good. Very responsible of you.
But enough about me. I digress.
Yes.
Your
yes.
story about being the prayer coordinator.
Co-coordinator.
Co-coordinator.
So I didn't have much of an accent. But there were a few words.
That is false.
Okay. There were a few words that just came out, right? So I am reading the story, The Polar Express. Have I told you this story before?
The Polar Express?
The Polar Express. But I was practicing with my roommates, and they gave me crap about Pola, so I did not do that, okay?
Santer?
No, I didn't do Santer, thank goodness. All right. So I'm sitting there, and I forget what part of the book this is at. It's been a couple years since I read the book. But there's a line where this. I'll just do it as I said it. I'm sitting up there reading in front of the entire ward, which is so weird now that I think about it. I was reading a book to a bunch of 18-year-olds.
You're reading the Polar Express to a bunch of 18-year-olds.
But it was fun. I don't know. People liked it, maybe. And so Santa reaches up and pulls a bell off the harness.
Oh, off the harness.
Yes. I totally said harness. No, 100%. That's what I said. And even though this is like a serious part of the book, half the group is just absolutely dying laughing. And the other half is looking at me like they're not sure what word I just said.
What is he speaking English?
I don't.
He must have just got home from his
know
mission.
What he
He's
said.
So righteous. He's so righteous.
And that's when I showed them, flipped the book over and showed them the drawing.
Hey, look at this drawing right
look
here.
Look at this drawing.
Look at this really drawing. Well, he's got a drawing of a harness
pulled
here.
The bell right off the harness.
Bell right off the harness. Santa did it.
Wicked pissa.
Hey, all that's right. The other thing, too, though. This is what everyone is doing wrong right now. Okay? What? I'm just getting. This is a huge pet peeve of mine, actually.
They sound like they're from
wicked,
New Jersey.
Wicked is an adverb.
Correct.
It's an adverb. Used in the slang, it's an adverb. Something is wicked awesome. Something's wicked cool. Wicked pissa. Something's, whatever it is.
Can
but
I
it,
say
it's
that a, on this show? I'm not sure we, I can it, say that.
Say whatever we want. We say whatever we want.
That's right.
So, but it is not like, oh, that's wicked. No, 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 no. That is not how that word is
that
used.
That is not how that
you
word
have,
is used.
You have all hijacked it, okay? And you're using it inappropriately, and it drives me crazy.
Yes, yes. Well, Matt, last week our opening was weak. This week, it was wicked pissa.
It was wicked awesome.
Wicked awesome. It was a terrific. It was terrific opening. All right. So, Matt, let's go now to
Norwell.
The...
I went to Norwell. The guy
Norwell.
Said it just like that.
Norwell
I grew up
High
in
School.
Norwell.
Norwell.
I'm like, you went to Norwell? That's awesome.
That's awesome. That's wicked awesome. I'm glad I landed this plane safely. All right. Are you ready? It's now that we've spent a bunch of time talking in bad Boston accents. It's now time for the Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, Kyle Collinsworth made a start this past weekend for the Dallas Mavericks.
That's pretty awesome. It'd be better if it were to the Celtics, but that's fine.
It would be, well, yes.
This is
a
whole Boston-themed show tonight.
Yeah,
you understand that, right? That's what's happening right now. It's all Boston all the time, everybody.
That's right. So Collinsworth is sticking around. He's going to have at least a couple of year career here and maybe beyond that. But I have to say at the beginning of the year, I didn't see this coming. And even after he kind of signed that 2-week contract, I was like, well, that doesn't guarantee anything. He's still got to perform and he has. So he's a part of that team now, not playing a ton of minutes, but still a part of that team. Matt,
I think I'm on the record as saying that his NBA dream was dead. So I'm glad to have been proved wrong here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I believe you did say that. Matt, let's talk about your New Orleans Saints. Narlins.
Yes.
Let's see if I can really do a bad accent. Is me trying to do the South.
No. Listen, if you got to do – listen, it's easy. The Louisiana accent's easy.
Why is that?
Okay.
That's
it.
All right. All right,
it's
Water
like the
Boy.
Coach from Waterboy.
Yeah.
You get Orgeron on here. You get Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, that's true. I can't understand.
Hey, there's a guy at work. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show tonight, but there's a guy at work where you can tell when you get texts from him, you can tell that he's trying to do talk to text because Siri cannot understand his Cajun accent. So there was this group text. Somebody's daughter had a baby. So he sent into the group text with a bunch of us at work. He sent a picture of his new granddaughter. You know, so some baby had just been born. You know, it's this little newborn baby, just precious, right? I mean, beaming with pride. This guy, he's with his granddaughter, beaming with pride. Everybody's sending texts back. Oh, she's what a little angel. She's adorable. Oh, congratulations, you know. And they call him Papa, right? That's the name for grandparents. So, oh, congratulations, Papa. You're gonna be great. And then you get this text from this other guy that's like, yes, the socks are mediocre. I'm like, what the flip? What is this even talking about? What is he talking about? And we all happen to be at dinner the next night, and somebody asked him, they're like, what was that up with that text you sent about this guy's granddaughter? And his wife looks at him and she says, were you doing the talk to text again? I told you that Siri can't understand a word you're saying. Get your phone out right now. She made him get his phone out and do a whole bunch of versions like, oh, say this. Oh, say this. And so we could see all the jacked up stuff that Siri was getting off him because his accent is so thick. He sounds like the coach from The Waterboy. Anyway,
that's awesome.
I digress.
Back to
Drew Brees.
We're digressing all over the place.
We're accents all night tonight. Yeah, it's accents all night. Accents.
So Drew Brees in, I don't know, some New Orleans newspaper. Do you guys have more than one?
Is this the Times-Picayune?
Yeah, the Times-Picayune. In the Times-Picayune, he is quoted as basically saying that he thinks Taysom Hill has all of the skills to be successful in the NFL. Basically, I felt like it was one of those things where reporter puts Drew Brees on spot about backup quarterback, Drew Brees says nice things. That's what I took it as. But if you read the article and some response from BYU fans, it's like, Drew Brees thinks Taysom Hill's going to be his replacement. That is not what Drew Brees said.
Now, Drew Brees was saying,
very complimentary.
But he's not. What's he going to say? Oh, no, our backup quarterback is terrible. As a matter of fact, we're talking about the third string quarterback, right? That's who this guy is?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's he supposed to say?
No, Drew Brees is a good guy and very, very politically adept. So
very right.
Don't read too much into this one.
By all accounts, nice guy. And his kids are hilarious, by the way.
And he's a Boilermaker. So we'll get to Boilermakers here in a minute.
Great Instagram follow, Drew Brees.
Yes.
Great
Instagram follow. All right. So, Matt, men's basketball, since we last met, they lost to Stanford in the NIT. Ho-hum, whatever.
Stanford. They lost to Stanford.
Okay. Stanford doesn't get a Boston accent. They don't deserve it.
Do you like apples? Do you like apples?
Oh, I guess that's all right.
How do you like them
apples? All right.
There's a lot of stuff from that movie I could say about Stanford. That we probably can't say on this podcast.
We cannot say. Southie is not, there won't be anyone from Southie on this podcast.
Not Rise and Shout approved.
Not Rise and Shout approved. So anyway, lose to Stanford, Matt. It was kind of a, you know, we said this in the preview. Stanford and us are pretty evenly matched. It was going to come down to the end. It came down to the end. BYU didn't make the shot. Stanford did. I don't think people like making a big deal about this loss. To me, it is not a big deal. It was a 50-50 shot. We lost. Moving on.
Yeah, pretty evenly. It's an evenly matched. It was an evenly matched game.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you're honest, when you look in the mirror about where we are as a program and what level of basketball we're playing this year, nothing about the game should surprise you or shock you.
Nope. We're talking about basketball, so I'm going to need some caffeine. Heath Schroyer, Matt,
Schroyer,
who was part of the coaching staff this last year, was named the head coach at McNeese State. Unfortunately, it's not in football, or we'd get a chance to play him here this fall.
That'd be pretty weird. That'd be weird.
That'd be wicked weird. But Schroyer was named the head coach. Of course, he has been a head coach, what, three times before? Two or three times before?
Three times before? Four times before?
I can't remember. But Schroyer obviously is leaving. He was given a lot of credit for I don't know what this year, to be quite frank, because we didn't get better than last year. Now I get it.
And we weren't like defensively super strong.
We were fine defensively, but I don't know that we were that much better than last year.
Yeah, exactly my point, though, right? Yeah. I didn't feel like there was this massive step change in defensive performance.
So, friend of the podcast, though, this was like 6 years ago that Mitch Harper came on. Wasn't it? Like,
oh, Mitch Harper.
Yeah. On Cougar Sports Wire, he writes an article where he basically, it's kind of a, you know, why is Schroyer going? Who could his potential replacements be? But then he goes on to say something in here that I just thought, in all respect to Mitch, because I love the guy and I think he's an excellent reporter and he does a really good job. And you know, back in the day, it was just us in Cougar Center, if you remember, right?
Oh yeah, this is when podcasts were just cool, right? That's now we're right. Podcast hipsters. We were doing this before it was cool.
That's right, we were. That's right. He says Schroyer was good enough for 4 to 5 wins for this BYU team. I'm going to call absolute BS on that.
Yeah, I'm not.
An assistant coach, I'm not saying coaching isn't important and isn't worth wins, so don't misinterpret this. An assistant coach was worth 4 to 5 wins in a 24-win season. Not buying it.
No.
Two wins, maybe? But even then, I don't even know how do you even dimensionalize that? How do you even say, yeah, he was worth 4 to 5 wins? I don't know. Mitch spent more time around the team, obviously, than you or I did from, you know, thousands of miles away. But I still think that's a reporter overestimating an assistant coach's impact.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd observed some giant step change in the culture, the performance of the team, and you could really attribute it to something he had done, maybe. But I don't, even looking at what he's saying here, I don't know that that's what he's saying either, right? So 4 or 5 wins, I feel like, is a little high.
I feel like it's a little high.
But I think you got to say he made a difference. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a positive impact on the program. I mean, but I don't know how you, like, I'm with you. I don't know how you quantify that.
I don't know how you quantify that either. Matt, do they need to make a big splashy hire to replace Schroyer? Or can they do it with internal or somebody that we've likely never heard of? Does it have to be somebody with a ton of experience? Like, Schroyer had decades of coaching experience, right? And at least qualitatively, people, including Mitch Harper, thought that had a big impact on the team this year. Is that something that has to happen again?
I don't think it has to happen again. I think we got lucky, right? Schroyer was available, was familiar with the program, and was between jobs. And this wasn't a place that he was ever – this was never a place he was going to stay for very long.
He was
biding his time for another head coaching gig. One hadn't come up, and so this made sense.
Yep. He was a – I thought if we got 2 years out of him, that'd be great.
So I think that there's – you know, if the stars line up right on some of these other guys that Hoppe refers to in his article, that could be good. But I think at the end of the day, you just got to pick the guy that's the right guy. And maybe it is one of these, you know, one of these internal guys, some of those guys around.
Experience is good, but I think the right coach who brings the right set of skills to complement what Rose and the other guys on the staff already do is more important than number of years on a resume. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Zachary Thornton for our first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
And he reached us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. This is Zachary Thornton. Twitter. At Coronado Zach. He says, please guys, once and for all, please help put the mediocre movement to an end. We might be stuck at good, but not mediocre. Okay, so Matt, I'm sure you followed on the BYU Twitter universe. There has been a discussion about the word mediocre and if BYU's basketball program is mediocre, and people saying, well, mediocre would be the middle of the pack, which in college basketball with 300, you know, Division I teams would be, you know, 150th in the country. And of course, BYU's not ranked there by any of the computers or any, you know, observer. And then the people on the mediocre side come back and say, well, yeah, but there's 300 freaking teams. Like, in the end, you got to make the tournament, right? So Matt, where do you stand on this? Is the BYU basketball program stuck in mediocrity, or is it stuck in something else, or is this just a useless semantics exercise?
It is a fun semantic exercise. I don't know if it's totally useless. But I think that a good basketball team makes the tournament more consistently than this. So if I've got choices between the words good or mediocre, Debbie Downer, I'm taking mediocre.
I'll say this. I don't think we're mediocre by the strict definition of the word mediocre. Okay? Right? The 95-96 team that was 15-13, that's a mediocre team. Okay?
That's a bad team.
Then, of course, it got really bad. No, bad was the next year. They were 1-25.
They were both
9-21. Okay?
I submit to you that all three of those teams were bad.
Yeah, but then it doesn't mean anything. If 15-13 is the same descriptor as 1-25, like, it's like...
Well, then you need another bad descriptor. You got to have bad and, like...
Very bad?
Wicked bad.
So I mean, it's like, you remember that Jerome Bettis commercial back in the day about high fives? So what'd you do after you won the Super Bowl? Gave a high five. What'd you do when you successfully last ordered a pizza? Gave a high five. Right? You got to have some demarcation here between these words. But I think what is getting lost here is this. This was not a good... This has been a bad 2 years for Dave Rose. And yes. I don't mean that... I don't mean that in, like, fire Dave Rose. You and I have...
You want to fire Dave Rose. You hate Dave Rose.
Have been on, you know, very
Why
much...
Why do you hate Dave Rose?
Stop it. Just be quiet. These are the worst two teams statistically that he's had since his first year. Right? They're the worst two teams. And this year, it was, you know, in some ways, exceeded expectations because they were about the same as last year. And we thought they'd be worse than last year. We were afraid they might not reach 20 wins, if you remember, in the offseason, after Mika declared to go pro, and then, especially after we heard Emery wouldn't be joining the team. So I don't know. Mediocre might maybe the right word. The problem is this. It's not been a very good couple of years. I feel way more optimistic about 2018-2019, Matt, than I do about this past year. But you know, Rose has got to turn this around. This has not been a great couple of years.
Yeah, it's been bad. Mediocre.
We've won 20 games. I mean, it's not been bad.
No, it's not been bad. But you've got to get into the tournament, and you know, but it goes back to the conversation we had before, the third place conversation, right? You got to be something other than third place.
Yep. Yep.
You know, whether that's in the West Coast Conference or in the Mountain West or whatever.
Hey, if Gonzaga leaves, I think we'll be second place next year for sure.
Yay, addition by subtraction.
Well, it depends on who they use to replace them. All right, Matt.
If you can't beat them, wait for them to leave the conference.
That's right. That's what all the Mountain West did with us. Oh, snap! Take that, San Diego State, San Diego Tribune writer guy.
Yeah, guy.
How about this? You're a San Diego sports columnist, and you tweet about BYU after they lose the NIT. Does that say more about you or about BYU?
Yeah, I think you're a loser.
I mean, I saw that tweet, and then I think Justin Sweeney also sent it to me, and I was just like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Like, I couldn't even tell you where San Diego State's playing. If they're not in the tournament, like, I don't pay attention to the NIT or the CIT or any of that stuff unless BYU's in it, right?
Did they still have a team after Kawhi Leonard left?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I have no idea.
So, Matt, let's talk about spring football here, okay? And we'll come back to March Madness after we have our football talk. So, some interesting things. But first, let's start with another tweetbag question from Gary Payne. At Fast Break GP. Man, I haven't been in the hashtag tweet bag for a few weeks. I wish it were a tweet room or tweet house. That way when I enter, it feels more comfortable than climbing in a bag. I'm with Adam on this one. He doesn't apparently like the climb on in. Thanks,
so,
Gary.
Tweet house is better?
I'm not endorsing Gary's tweet room or tweet house. I'm just... Tweet house
is better.
I didn't say that. I may actually maybe a little, better than the
Tweet House sounds like something the cops would raid. Now, Tweet Room, you might be able to sell me on Tweet Room. That could be like, would.
It's creepy.
That sounds exclusive. No, it sounds exclusive. Like something that's roped off and has a bouncer. Right?
All right.
But we're more open than that. Climb on in the tweet bag, Gary. There's plenty of room. Climb on in.
Stop whispering. Gosh, man. We're gonna lose listeners again. All right. So he says, thoughts on spring football tone and does it mean anything? Hashtag painbag. Matt, does this tone that's being reported, and I'm gonna buy the reporters feel it, right? Because I know a lot of these guys that are reporting on the team, and I think I can parse through their, you know, usual spring football speak to get to the fact that these reporters honestly believe the tone has shifted. Okay, so assuming that's true, how much stock and what does that mean?
Well, yeah, I think you have to buy that the tone has shifted. The coaching staff has no choice, right?
Yes, absolutely. After a 4-9 season, you can't come in and be like, "Yeah,
it's cool, guys. We're going swimming."
That's right.
We're going to Seven Peaks today. No, you're not. You're going to hit the weight room.
Right.
That's where you're going today. You're going to the gym. Now we'll see if it plays out. But when you hear the players, some of the comments players made, and you know, I'm going to go back to the same comment that Bo Hodge made a couple weeks ago about, you know, what are the things we need to do different? Show up to meetings on time. And you have the players are talking about those things, and you hear, you know, the types of stuff that they're, you know, it looks like they're opening up the book a little bit, you know, and really trying some things out on both sides of the football to see what they've got in their toolbox, which I think is a way of pushing the players a little bit harder and making them, you know, making them learn some new things quickly or prove themselves. And so that type of stuff I think is good and has high potential of bearing positive fruits when you get into actual game situations.
So, Matt, are you encouraged or discouraged by the fact that last week's scrimmage, all reports seem to indicate that the offense dominated the defense? Is that encouraging or discouraging or both?
It's neither. We've talked about this. Yeah, I feel like we talk about this every year. These scrimmages are going to go back and forth. You know, sometimes the defense has an advantage as they become more familiar with the playbook. You know, in this particular situation, the defense has zero clue what's coming. And, so the offense has a little bit of an advantage there. I am encouraged that the offense is able to move the ball a little bit, even with the advantage of, you know, the defense having not really seen much. So that is encouraging that they're able to put some coherent stuff together. But I'm not ready to, you know, I'm not buying my 2018 national championship t-shirt yet.
I already have one.
I bet you do.
Well, I think, Matt, it's encouraging to me just because we need to see some positive things out of the offense. Like you said, it's good to see that. But most of the defensive starters didn't scrimmage. The guys that are going to play against Arizona. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Let's not get too excited.
Yeah. No, I don't think a single starting linebacker played in that scrimmage, if I remember correctly. So Matt, let's go through some of these position groups that maybe some we have talked about, some we haven't talked about as much. Running backs first. Matt, is redshirt freshman Zach Katoa the starter? According to reports in the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News, it looks like right now the most impressive running back in camp has been Zach Katoa. So Matt, what do you make out of this?
It's an awesome story, right? I mean, you know, he's a redshirt freshman. He's a scout team star. You know, the story is awesome. And if you look at the pictures, of him running and stuff from practice, I mean, he's got, like, he passes the eye test, right? Just with the way that he's running, you know, and where he's keeping his pads, and all this stuff. Yeah. And so
he holds it. Love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot there to like. And we've talked about this too. I mean, he looks like he showed up to spring camp in pretty good shape.
Yep.
You know, and clearly so based on his performance, right? So I think it's pretty cool. And we talked a little about this a couple weeks ago about who the running back was going to be, right? And what I really like about this is the signal that it sets, the tone that it sets for the entire team, which is, hey, we're looking for the best guy. Yep. We're looking for which one of you is going to be the best at your position. We don't care who you were. We don't care who you are. We don't care what you've done. We don't care what somebody out there thinks you're capable of doing. We're interested in seeing what you do right now. And that's the message that is sent to everybody on the whole team when you have a guy emerging like this, who's, is coming from where he's coming from.
So Jay Drew, in his article yesterday, and we're recording this on Tuesday evening, he starts out his article with a story that Fred Warner and some of BYU's other captains approached the coaching staff. And this isn't like some Jay Drew story. This was what Kalani Sitake told him, okay? Like, this isn't like some unsourced story. This is what Coach Sitake said, that a group of players came and said, hey, based on the way Katoa is playing in practice, he should be the starting running back. And what Sitake said to conclude the story was, we thought about it, but decided it would just be best for him to keep redshirting and do this stuff. Matt, what do you make of that story? Like,
that's a big deal.
So you know, Warner and company come and ask, and the coaches, like, that's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a real big deal, right? So, because if Warner's playing that guy in practice and then going against the running backs that he saw during the season and is going to the coaching staff unprovoked to say, hey, this guy's one of the best players we have. You need to put him on the football field. That's an extremely good sign.
Yes. And also, you know what it shows? Notice the only name in there is Fred Warner. I'm guessing Sitake kept anybody else's name out because they still might be on the team, right?
Right.
What side of the team does Fred Warner play on? How good was the offense last year? I think this shows a high level of frustration that Warner and some of those defenders had in the offense.
Yes.
And we all said that all season, right? Like, it's no good to be a defensive player when your offense is that bad, or vice versa, to be fair. Like, if one of the units is that bad, the other side is it's just going to be very frustrating. Because even when you have a big stand, it doesn't matter, they're not going to score, right? So you stop the other team 3 and out, and then you're back on the field, 3 plays later yourself, right? So, interesting story. Matt, let's do a little buy or sell. We're going to do that with all of the position groups we talk about today. Buy or sell running back by committee for BYU in 2018.
Sell.
Tell me more.
I think we're going to see, I think, if you look at, especially as you read some of this about Katoa, and maybe I'm jumping on the Katoa bandwagon a little bit too early, right? But if you listen to the stuff that this coaching staff is trying to push, and then you hear A.J. Stewart say he plays at full speed, and even if he makes a mistake, he does it 100 miles an hour. I think that they could get really comfortable with a player or two that emerge and take on the role. And then you look at the list of guys that that are kind of in the mix, right? Riley Burt, Kavika Fanua, Kyle Griffiths, who I think is probably not every down running back type of guy.
Right.
And maybe even KJ Hall, who's recovering from surgery. What I'm reading, the tea leaves I'm reading right now say we've got one or two running backs. I think Squally Canada and maybe this Katoa guy. And you've got some position changes coming.
Yeah. I think you've nailed it here. I also don't know what running back by committee means. Okay. I think the last time BYU actually did that was 2015 when Jamal was not on the team and you had Algie Brown, Francis Bernard, and Hine all get more than 50 carries that year. Now there was also some injuries worked in there. Nate Carter had 37 carries. But if you look at last year, like, was it a running back by committee? It was only running back by committee because people kept getting hurt, right?
Right. Like, there were injuries and suspensions and stuff. So that wasn't like a designed approach.
And even so, there was only three guys that averaged more than three carries per game total over the year. Now Hall maybe throwing fourth because he did, you know, play some towards the end, but it was really Kafensis, Tolu Tau, and Canada that carried the ball, right? So I don't know what that means. Like, do people really think we're going to use? I'm selling because we're not going to use five running backs on a regular basis unless somebody gets hurt. We're going to use two to three. I don't know who exactly they're going to be. I think it's pretty clear right now that Katoa's got an inside track at one of those. Canada's probably got an inside track at one of those, and that means there's one left, right?
And I think it's probably Riley Burt.
I don't think it's Burt. I think it's Kafensis.
You think Burt? Kafensis is a change of pace guy. But okay, maybe Riley Burt. So is Riley Burt a position change? Because two or three of these guys will not be running backs when we start in the fall.
I Burt might be a position change. I don't know.
I think you're looking at some linebackers and maybe even a slot receiver.
Slot receiver, potentially defensive backs, depending on the speed and size profiles. But we'll see. Wide receiver, Matt. Out of the Daily Herald, there was an article yesterday, I believe, or maybe it was early this morning, from Jared Lloyd, who basically said the headline is BYU football wide receivers aren't getting hyped up over successes. I would certainly hope not. It is spring football, right? And all of these guys that are returning came from one of the worst offenses in the history of BYU football. So I certainly hope, and to be fair to these guys, that is a headline that Jared didn't write, and certainly none of these wide receivers wrote. But all of that aside, Matt, you look at the bulk of his article, and Micah Simon is looking really, really good in practice, is what we're being told by reporters and by the staff. And then we've heard a lot about some of the others as well, but Simon's been the one, I guess, that has been most mentioned, and Tariq Buchanan as well. And obviously, there'll be Dylan Colley and Gunnar Romney coming in.
And you got MLP still.
Is he a wide receiver? Is he a tight end? We'll get to him in a second. I've got him later. I think he's a tight end. But yes, you could have him. So you got all this. So the question, Matt, is has your opinion of this wide receiver group changed based on what we've seen so far in spring practice?
Nope.
You're still wait and see.
Yeah, oh, very much so on the receivers.
All right, so let me give you our buy or sell. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Buy or sell, wide receivers will be a position of strength for the Cougars in the 2018 season.
I'm selling that.
I'm buying it!
Oh, I'm selling that.
But not because of Micah Simon, but Tariq Buchanan maybe as a deep threat, and then Gunnar Romney and the Cully. I think it'll be a strong position. So yes, I'm buying it. You're not buying it, huh?
No.
How do you feel about Dylan Cully? Feel good about Cully?
I have positive feelings about Dylan Colley's return to Provo.
All right. Well,
but I'm not ready to go buy a Dylan Cully jersey. We'll just have to wait and see.
Bought my Dylan Cully jersey.
My senses are just numbed by years of watching our guys get beat up at the line of scrimmage and not be able to get open. And I can't take it anymore. You know, and then we have these 6'13" guys that, you know, and just throw them the fade in the corner. We couldn't figure it out. So I'm really hesitant to get excited about receivers right now. I've been jilted too many times.
You're grumpy about the wide receivers.
I am grumpy about the wide receivers.
Yeah, I'm buying just because I think the changes in the group will be the difference. If you don't have Gunnar Romney and Dylan Colley coming in and Tariq Buchanan, I would say I am absolutely selling.
I'm sad if I don't have those guys coming in.
I mean, I think Simon is serviceable and could grow into something even more than that, right? Based on what we saw last year. But no, I wouldn't be excited. All right, tight ends, Matt. One of the worst stories from last year was tight end, transfer tight end Joe Tukuafo, who couldn't make an impact last year because an idiot coach at Utah State wouldn't let him out of his national letter of intent. You may remember that story.
Okay, can I just take this moment to say these rules are so stupid?
You and I have pounded
so
these rules.
Stupid.
They should be able to transfer at any time they want.
They should be able to go mid-season if the transfer rules of the university allow them to switch courses and stuff in between terms or whatever. They should be able to do whatever they want.
I don't know about in season. I think as an academic institution that's problematic. But
no, that's what I'm saying. Like said, if you got two schools that are on terms or something, and there's a normal route for a student to register that way, they should be able to do it.
But I mean, this whole thing. If somebody wants to change their mind, they can change their mind. I just don't. Anyway, but anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about him playing this year. And he is a big dude, Matt. 6'4", 275-pound redshirt freshman who, by the way, has not played in an actual football game since he was a senior at East High School in Salt Lake City in 2014. Not the first time that's been said about a BYU player, by the way, that they haven't played in a game in 4 years.
Yeah, not a big deal.
Not a big deal. So, Matt, what do you think about, you know, Joe Tukuafu, who looks like could be a really interesting piece for the offensive coaching staff in that he was a very good pass catcher in high school, and with his size and strength, could be a guy that you would have in short yardage situations, right, as a tight end. So what do you make of Tukuafu?
I'm excited about Tukuafu. You know, I think this guy could be the big deal, the real deal. I mean, he's a big guy. He's not going to have a problem getting off the line of scrimmage.
No, he's not.
And he's a pass catcher.
Yes.
You know? And so there's a lot you can do with a guy that's, I mean, you might have to trim him down just a little bit. I mean, 275 is pretty big, but, there's a lot of different things you can do with this guy. And if you can create the right mismatches or you get a couple of multiple tight end sets out there, this is an exciting development to get this guy out on the field this year.
Yeah, yeah. And sticking with that position, obviously Matt Bushman, freshman All-American, but then you also have a guy that kind of got forgotten because of injury, was Moroni Laulupututau, who last year had one of those terrible Lisfranc injuries. What was it? I don't know. Right before the season started, like the week of.
Yeah.
And obviously did not play at all last year. I think that hurt the offense a lot. I think it hurt Bushman. Imagine the kind of year he could have had if you had been running some cool two tight end sets, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where you got to worry about both of those guys. Matt, he's not back yet from injury. He's not taking reps. He's not quite there. Do you think Pututau is going to be a factor as well this year?
See, that's tough. That's a hard injury to come back from. This is the injury, as you know, we're all familiar with Taysom's experience with this. This is the injury that eventually ended Chad Lewis's career. You know, it's a bad deal. You know, but he didn't have to have surgery. So you know, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And you know, and it gave him an opportunity to work on some other things. And I think that, MLP is going to be a contributor, in 2018. I think there's some reasons to be excited about what's going on with the tight ends right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe not in the first few games, depending on how fall camp goes for him. But I agree with you, Matt. Buy or sell, BYU will regularly use four different tight ends in 2018.
I'm actually buying that.
I am too. I think because
of how I feel about the wide receivers. But the other thing too Tukuafu can block.
And there's a couple other blocking guys on the roster we haven't talked about.
So I think you have some real cool opportunities here that you can open up with multiple tight end sets, put guys in motion. I mean, Bushman is a guy that you can line up on the edge and then motion him out into the slot and learn some things about what the defense is doing. I think watch if you do like a two tight end, like a double tight on one side with Tukuwafu and Bushman. I mean, you can do some really crazy stuff with these guys, and I think we've got a lot of options there. And it's going to provide more optionality than the wide receiver core does right now. And the coaches are going to have no choice but to take advantage of that.
The set I'm excited about, Matt, is a three tight end set with the three tight ends we've talked about. Okay. Where, you know, Bushman you can move him anywhere, right? Into a more wide receiver position or keep him tight, right? Or heck, put him in the backfield next to the running
back. Put him in the backfield and then motion him up to the line of scrimmage and see what people do.
See what the defense does.
You know, or bring him back and see what they do.
Yeah, and I think that's big. And we saw Bushman can run block, right? That's not his number one strength, but he can do that. But imagine if you've got a mobile quarterback like Bo Hodge or Zach Wilson and a good running back, and you've got those three tight ends, that opens up mismatches all over the place. If they decide to play the run, right, you've got three pass-catching tight ends that are going to absolutely murder you in the middle of the field, right? If they decide we've got to do something about these tight ends and we've got to provide coverage for all three of them in a set like that, then all of a sudden you're going to see some massive running lanes open up for whoever's back there, right? And and if you're doing a RPO type of run pass option type of thing, you could see some massive quarterback runs end up where, you know, the quarterback pulls back, sees everybody's covered, and then has, you know, yards and yards ahead of them. I think the tight end, I'm with you, I'm more excited about the tight ends than I am the wide receivers. If all of these guys are healthy and are with it, it could be a game changer for the offense. Speaking of the quarterback, Matt, Zach Wilson has been getting a ton of reps this spring. We don't know exactly who's been getting the most, because of course the press don't get to watch most of the practice. And Bo Hodge was sick, so we also know that Zach Wilson's probably getting a few more than he would, because Bo Hodge has been dealing with something, but nothing serious as far as we know. So Matt, buy or sell this bold proclamation: Zach Wilson starts against Arizona.
Sell that.
I'm also selling it. But I thought it'd be interesting to discuss. Do you give it a 15% chance? Less?
I don't know, 10 to 15 maybe. There's still a lot of questions to be answered here, right? We've still got all of fall camp. But right now my gut feel is that it's the Bohaj show.
I think you and I have been basically talking about Bohaj and Zach Wilson since spring ball started. We have not hardly talked about Tanner, but I mean, that's fair, right? He's not here. He is there. He's not here in Minnesota. But he's not...
That would be the wrong place for him.
He's not participating fully in spring practice, right? He's participating, but he's not getting reps in these contact drills and the way and these type of things. But here's the deal. Matt, are we selling Tanner's chances short? I mean, Tanner's got a better chance starting than Zach, right?
Tanner may have a higher chance starting than Zach.
But the tough part about that is, take a stand.
I just said Zach's got 10 to 15, and I think Bo Hodge's chances are greater than 50%. I'll give you a buy sell.
Okay, I'll give you a buy sell. All right, give me one. Hit me.
Tanner Mangum transfers.
Before the season starts?
Yep.
I'm selling that. Listen, all these guys need to do is check out Jake Heaps. Okay? What everybody wants to do is look at somebody like a Russell Wilson or somebody that transferred and went and started. Okay? All right? That's what people want to look at.
Yeah, but you got to look at what your alternative is. If you think you're just never going to start at BYU again, why? At least go somewhere where you could start.
But here's the problem. Why is he going to think that? Unless the coaches come to him and say, dude, you are not going to be in the running, okay? There's no way for him to have data in spring because he's not fully participating.
Yeah, but you see the interactions. You look at what the offenses they're putting together. Does this play to your strength? How are the coaches talking to you?
Mangum is mobile. He is not a runner, assuming he comes back to full health, which of course is a big assumption, right? Based on the injury. But assuming he came back to full health, remember how good Mangum is at moving around. Like, you're not going to put him in.
No, he's better. He's better when you roll the pocket out and have him throw on the run.
Yeah,
he does better in that situation.
But I'm saying he can run the football if you needed him to, right? I mean, he's not Bo Hodge in that respect, certainly not Taysom Hill. But I think we forget, like, how good of an athlete this kid is besides throwing the football, right? He can do a lot of other things. So I just don't think if I'm him, I don't think you'll get enough data to know by fall. Now, do I think there's a good chance he transfers? Yes, I do. Because I think if he's not named the starter in fall camp, I don't know that you see him at BYU the next year.
And it's tough. It's tough if you're him because you're hurt and you got this new offensive coaching staff that has not really had a chance to see you go.
Right.
And you get into fall and they're going to have all this data on these other guys. You know, they may fall in love with one of these guys between now and then, and it could be a pretty big hurdle for someone like Tanner to overcome just because he hasn't had the reps.
Well,
I mean, it might not be, you know, I think you're right.
None of these guys recruited you.
Right. Nobody here feels any commitment to putting Tanner Mangum under center.
So it's tough. I mean, he's a senior, right? So for him to transfer, again, I just think the timing's wrong for him to transfer. I could be wrong, but like you said, if he gets a real big like feeling, you know, he may try to do something.
But then you try and find a spot, like, and you've only got 1 year to crack in. I mean, you have a couple of bad choices at that point. I mean, it's just, it's tough options.
You're picking between bad choices. I mean, if you wanted to transfer to an FCS school, you're going to start, right? But if you want to transfer to another FBS school, you're just going to sit on a bench someplace else, most likely, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Good discussion there, buddy. Tim Jacobson on sent us an email. That's at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. He says, I know this will be a tough one to answer because articles and things we can analyze are generally about the skill positions, and he's talking about the offensive line here. But I've always felt the O-line could have been much better under Empey, and the D-line could not get adequate push on opposing O-lines. The chatter coming out of spring camp has been about precision and how precision and execution matter. I've even heard the Mendenhall phrases of perfection and high level thrown around. Can we get any more insight on if the O-line and D-line are improving, how good they might be? It's a good question. The reporters are not talking much about those units. So
it's really hard to see, right? And I know they've had some scrimmages here where they've let them hit the quarterback a little bit. And so that puts you in a position to really see what a defensive line looks like and an offensive line, because everybody's going to really go full speed. But most of the time in something like a spring camp, they're not allowed to hit him. And so they have to stop. They have to step up short. It's a weird place to be as a football player. And so I don't think you really have an idea of what you have in your linemen until you get them out there in a game and see what they do going full speed, defensive lineman trying to get penetration and rip somebody's head off, or what an offensive line does, you know, when they're up against a defensive line that's trying to really put the pressure on. So it's all anecdotal until the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Matt, rapid fire, because we're running out of time. Cornerbacks, Trevion Green and Keenan Ellis have been running with the first time team. Buy or sell, Green and Ellis are the starting quarterback tandem against Arizona.
Buying it.
Selling it. Too many injuries right now. Those guys will be in the mix, but they won't be the starters. Safeties, Matt, buy or sell. You know, we've got Austin Lee, obviously Gunwalaku potentially being a safety, Troy Warner. The safeties, maybe redo this buy or sell.
Love it. Change it up right now. So I have no real good time to react. Love it.
Yes. How about this? We'll keep it. the defensive backs will be a major problem for BYU in 2018. Buy or sell?
You didn't say major in the notes.
Nope.
But I'm buying it.
I'm selling.
I'm buying it.
I think our safeties will be good and our corners will be not as good.
So you think they'll be mediocre?
Possibly. Possibly mediocre. We'll see. All right, Matt, let's talk about March Madness. Got a couple of...
March Madness.
March Madness. All right. Justin Sweeney has a question for us.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He says, who's winning your family bracket? My 8-year-old daughter is number one, and my 10-year-old, who picked Purdue, good job, buddy, is number two. Most members of the group are grown men with some pretty significant basketball experience.
Won the state tournament once.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right. Hashtag tweetbag. Matt, our tournament bracket, our group ended up being kind of lame. There's only five of us.
Yeah, I missed the registration for that.
Yeah, nice job, buddy.
Sorry, dudes.
And I can say, how old is Luke, our nephew?
Apparently he's old enough to beat you at a tournament. Pick him.
Oh, shut up. He also picked UVA. And by the way, we're all basically have the same score.
Everybody's hosed. UMBC hosed everybody. They ruined it for everyone. Losers.
No, they didn't. I got three of my Final Four still alive.
It ruined the whole tournament.
I got three of my Final Four still alive.
It's not even fun to watch.
Oh, my. Are you serious? This tournament has been terrific.
And that, it's awesome.
That game was
awesome.
That
was so awesome.
So let's get to Facebook question that we have here. And if you want to do that, and climb on in the tweet bag through Facebook. It's facebook.com/riseandshot.
That was weird.
Shut up.
We're running out of time, so I'm not going to dwell on it, but that was weird.
You came up with this crap.
Through Facebook? I didn't say that. That's weird.
If you want us to retire, climb on in. You just let me know the day.
No, I just want you to use it correctly. We're running out of time. You need to keep moving. Stop saying weird stuff.
All right. You say weird stuff. Andre Hutchins says, pick the remaining 16 teams. Basically, let's pick the bracket from here on out. Who's your Final Four? Who's your champ? And he says, what was the craziest game yet? UMBC, the 16th seed beating Virginia, or Nevada overcoming a 22-point deficit in 10 minutes? Michigan's buzzer beating prayer. You know, usually that Michigan game might be one of the top, like, three games so far in the tournament. I don't think it is. As crazy as that sounds. I have to, it's got to be University of Maryland, Baltimore County beating Virginia, doesn't it? That has to be the craziest game. And it wasn't even close.
It's like the craziest outcome of all time in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. I mean, if they beat them on the last second shot, you say that's crazy, right? But to beat them, and heck, they hung in the next round, right? Amazing.
Yeah.
And that Nevada game was crazy.
I thought they were going to pull it out there at the end.
That Nevada game was also crazy. And yes, Andre, we both picked Virginia to win it all. So, but Matt, let's go through. You want to pick the rest of the bracket?
Oh, I do. I do, my friend.
Okay, let's look at one in the South bracket. You've got Kansas State and Kentucky.
Yep.
Who you got?
I got Kentucky there.
All right. I have, at that point, that was supposed to be, I had Arizona and Virginia in that game. So I'm going to go also with Kentucky. Then you've got on the other side, Cinderella Stories in Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada. Who you got?
I'm taking Nevada.
I'm taking Loyola, Chicago. Then the next round then would be headed to the Final Four. Do you have Kentucky or Nevada?
Kentucky.
I would, at that point, take Kentucky as well, going to the Final Four. All right, in the East, Villanova versus West Virginia. We both got Villanova, right?
I'm taking Villanova there.
All right, Texas Tech and Purdue. We both got Purdue.
And I'm not being a homer. I really think Purdue beats Texas Tech.
Boy, before Haas got injured, I was all in. I'll still say Purdue, but they are not the same team without Haas.
Yeah, that is true.
That's unfortunate. Villanova and Purdue, are you changing your pick? You had Purdue winning that game and going to the Final Four before. Are you sticking
with
that?
I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to say I believe. And part of it is I think Villanova walks into that game half asleep. I mean, look at the trail they've had. I don't think West Virginia is particularly difficult, to be honest with you. Nope. And the other two games they've played have been total snoozers. I think Villanova walks into that game half asleep, and you've got a Purdue team ready to prove something with some players that really want to step up and win one for this guy who's, you know. So I think Purdue wins that game.
All right. I think it's Villanova. I had them picked from the beginning. So, all right. So we've got Villanova and Kentucky as the first parts of our Final Four. All right, who you got between Florida State and Gonzaga? We both have Gonzaga, right?
Yep, I got Gonzaga.
All right, Michigan and Texas A&M?
I'm taking Michigan.
I'm taking the Aggies. And then who you got between Gonzaga and Michigan?
Gonzaga.
I've got Gonzaga. I had them in the Final Four from the beginning as well. And then in the Midwest, it's Kansas and Clemson. Boy, Clemson's playing some good basketball.
Yes, they are. Two
games. I did not have Kansas making the Final Four, so I'm going to go with Clemson in that game.
I'm also taking Clemson.
Which I actually had picked from the beginning, but I feel even better about it now. And then, of course, you got Duke and Syracuse. Syracuse, I don't even think they've played that well. I thought Michigan laid one of the biggest eggs I've ever seen in that game. Duke wins.
Yeah, it's Duke. I really would like it to be Syracuse, but it won't be.
But then between Duke and Clemson, who you got?
Clemson.
I am tempted, and I think I'm going to do it. I originally had Duke in my Final Four. I'm going to say Clemson pulls the upset with their fellow ACC member. So your Final Four is Kentucky, Gonzaga, Purdue, and
Clemson.
Clemson. So who you got winning the whole thing?
Kentucky.
Kentucky. I'm giving it to Villanova. I'm giving it to Villanova. But I think Gonzaga has a legitimate shot this year because of the chaos that's going on. I mean, Gonzaga's trip potential to get to the finals got just absolutely improved by the fact that they don't have to play Xavier, right? Mm-hmm. That I think was a bad matchup for them.
And they don't have to play UNC.
And then they don't have to play UNC, and they don't have to play, they don't have to, if they do reach the Final Four, they don't have to play Virginia. Right? I mean,
right.
If you had told me at the beginning of the tournament that they might be playing Nevada for a chance to go to the national championship, I mean, because that's not out of the realm of possibility, right? Nevada's a good enough team to out of that four in the South to come out of that. They could beat Kentucky. They could beat Loyola Chicago and then Kentucky, right? Nevada's good enough to do that. I mean, those twin brothers by themselves might be able to do that.
It could happen.
That's confusing as all get out, by the way. Twin brothers, could they have at least different haircuts? Do they both have to do the man bun?
Yeah, that's awkward.
I'm just saying, it's too much. Too much. I can't keep.
I can't do a man bun, so I don't. I probably shouldn't come.
Sure, you could. You could totally do a man bun right there in the back, buddy, where you got hair.
That is not a man bun.
Oh, that's not. That wouldn't work. I could do a man bun.
You're not pulling. If you're not pulling any hair from the top, I don't think that's
actually.
A man bun.
I'm doing a man bun right now. My hair's almost long enough. Should I grow it out and start doing a man bun?
Yes. Yes, you should.
I totally should do that, huh?
You definitely should do that. I think it'd be a really good look for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I work in agriculture. People love man buns in agriculture.
Yeah, totally do it.
Yeah, I should totally
it
do it.
It'd be great.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll be back next week to talk about the spring football game, kind of preview the spring football game, talk more March Madness, of course, because I love March Madness, and I watched a lot of basketball this past weekend.
I watched an embarrassing amount of basketball.
The only embarrassment would be not watching a lot of basketball. That's the embarrassment. March Madness is one of the greatest things ever.
It was one of the greatest inventions known to man.
It's terrific. It's terrific. If only college football could do a playoff that was a big deal.
Wouldn't work. It would mess up the students' academics.
That's
sorry,
true.
Adam.
That's true. Because March Madness, you know, it's perfectly placed in the semester to not be a disruption at all.
Oh, it's not disruptive at all. I mean, midterms?
Midterms.
Who needs them?
Yeah, yeah, forget those midterms. All right, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can check out this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/. What did I just say?
Slash.
At DeseretNews.com/podcast. Always follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiceShout. And as I've mentioned before, go to iTunes. Leave us a review. It's how people can find us. Bumps us up on the algorithm. So when people start looking for BYU sports podcasts, they'll run into this little show.
This little gem. They'll find this little beauty.
Yeah, this little beauty. It's wicked awesome. It's a wicked awesome podcast.
Wicked awesome.
It's one of the best Cougar podcasts that you'll ever find. You're right. You're right. Mine is way better than yours, isn't it?
Oh, mine's terrible. Yours is always better than mine. Happened? The best though is when you get angry and you don't realize you're doing it.
It's that my wife
the best.
My wife will sometimes laugh when I'm getting mad at the children.
I sometimes, when we get like together or our families together, I will do things that intentionally to annoy you so that you will snap at me in your Boston accent. I'm like, yep, that's what I needed to hear. Now I know I'm home.
Now I know
I'm with family.
Now I know I'm home. All right. Well, anyway, thank you guys for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
That was wicked awesome.
It was bad. I can't do the accent.
Way to go, buddy. Wicked awesome.
Wicked piss off.